Good morning, and welcome to Coastal Conversations here on WERU. We explore issues facing Maine's coastal communities through dialogue with people who live, work, and play on our coast. From fisheries to tourism, from energy to environment, from economy to ecology, we go beyond the social media soundbites, probing deeply into complex issues and solutions. Coastal Conversations is supported by Maine Sea Grant in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast. Welcome to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Coastal Conversations on WERU. I'm your host, Catherine Devine of Skudik Institute. This episode of Coastal Conversations features an episode of Skudik's podcast, Sea to Trees, a podcast I produced as the 2023 to 2024 Kathy and Jim Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellow in Science Communications at Skudik Institute. This episode is all about birds and birding. You get to hear from ornithologists, researchers, and slow birders. Before we jump into the show, I wanted to ask Brooke Goodman, an ornithologist featured in the episode, and the 2023 to 2024 Kathy and Jim Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellow in Science Research, some questions about how she got into birding and birding research. I hope it might inspire someone somewhere. So to begin, Brooke, tell us how you did it. How did you learn about birding and ornithology?
So I learned a lot about birds when my dad brought home a rescued yellow-naped Amazon parrot, actually, when I was younger. So I became really fascinated by their biology and their intelligence. And I only got involved with our native birds in high school when I got an internship with my local Audubon Society. So that's where I really began to see ornithology as a career rather than a hobby. And from there, I went to undergrad and I got a degree in zoology. I got involved in research from all angles. I got involved in bioacoustics research, molecular research, behavioral research, and I kind of found my place in bioacoustics.
That's really cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome. And do you have any advice for someone who might want to get involved in the field?
Yeah, you know, I would advise people to start local and figure out what in their area is available in terms of volunteering for maybe wildlife rehabilitation. Maybe your local Audubon Society has events where they need someone to keep an eBird list. There are tons of little ways to get involved in the field. That's how I started, is just getting involved locally. And it was just a really organic way to grow my skills and feel kind of safe in the field of ornithology, because it can be really intimidating when you think about the thousands of birds there are to learn and identify. But yeah, finding your local community.
Totally. And I'll put some links in the description to Skudik Institute, and maybe you can find some opportunities there. Okay, thanks so much, Brooke. Time to get into the show.
You're listening to Coastal Conversations on WERU at 89.9 FM and streaming online at weru.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Sea to Trees. I'm your host, Catherine Devine. Remember the naturalist from our last episode who's on her mission to record all the bird songs in Acadia? Laura Sebastianelli. This episode starts with her.
You know, you'll see red-winged blackbirds chase off, you know, other birds that they do not want near their nest, you know. And you'll see that, you know, anywhere with little birds chasing off the bigger birds, usually a bird of prey or something, you know, they're like, get out of here. They're protecting their nest from predators.
My time with Laura was my first time birding. Laura let me try out her parabolic microphone. Great for capturing sounds in the distance.
Okay, go ahead and pop these headphones off. Yeah, it's so clear. And I can hear everything from the water.
Are better mics for this situation for an ambient soundscape? You would use a different mic that has a wider field of target, where a parabola is highly focused.
I popped the headphones on. It felt like the rest of the world dimmed for a moment. It was just me and the birds in the natural world. We stopped by a wetland at the base of Champlain Mountain near the Precipice Trail to see if we could hear the American bittern, a bird Laura has been trying to record for a while now.
Because it's very difficult to walk in this area, I haven't spent a lot of time recording here. I always stop if it's early in the morning because I know that there are American bittern in here, which have a really wonderful sound, but I've never been able to capture it here. I heard it once here, but, you know, I wasn't able to record it.
And then we heard it. This sort of gulping, guttural swallow. Laura crept through the marsh, weaving through trees and past spider webs, deep into the thick grassy meadow, quick and quiet on her feet. She turned and shushed me. She needed absolute silence to record. I watched her collect tape from a distance. She stood absolutely still, holding her large microphone out in front of her, waiting to hear the bittern's call. She captured it, the tape she had been searching for. But good tape can always be better tape.
Like any bird that I'm recording, this is good, but so is a chance we can get closer, but I don't have hip boots on, so I can't, like, venture out there. But what we can do is follow the trail and see if there's a better vantage point for, like, this is stop number one. Get anywhere from 30 seconds to 2 minutes and then do very short little things, so this is all we're going to get here. But let's see if we can get in another position for
getting a closer sound recording.
And for the next hour or so, I followed Laura around, dashing and stopping and waiting and listening over and over and over again until she got it. The best, clearest, closest recording of the American bittern that she could muster. But I was a little confused. I didn't quite understand why getting this recording was so important.
What's so special about the American bittern?
There aren't a lot to begin with up here. But once you hear the song through the headphones, I hope you do, you'll understand how cool and unusual it is. You hear it gulping and then, make vocalizing, and it's just a great sound. And they're so secretive otherwise that you would never find it. I mean, they're masterful camouflage.
Laura wasn't trying to record the bittern for any particular reason. It wasn't that special to her. Laura saw the uniqueness in all birds, in all of nature.
I think listening to birds inspires people, period. Birds inspire us. I think that's part of the connection.
The American bittern population, along with the population of many birds in and around Acadia National Park, is rapidly declining, mainly due to habitat loss, which unfortunately is a common tale in bird conservation. One of the biggest conservation projects taking place at Skudik Institute is a partnership with Friends of Acadia and the National Park Service. The project seeks to restore wetland habitat functions and see if that has an impact on the bird population. It takes place at the Great Meadow, a wetland that's been pretty disturbed. And because of that, it's pretty disturbing. Chris Nadeau, the climate change adaptation scientist at Skudik Institute, gave me a quick rundown.
So the Great Meadow, although it looks like this beautiful wetland when you drive by some of the overlooks, it is a beautiful wetland. It doesn't just look like a beautiful wetland. It's actually a really disturbed landscape. And so water doesn't flow through the wetland the way it naturally should. And so the water, there's a lot of old roadbeds that go through the wetland that stop the water from flowing through. There's a lot of ditching in the wetland that actually causes the water to leave the wetland faster than it should. And then the big issue right now is that there's a really undersized culvert at the outlet of the wetland that actually allows water out too fast during dry spells. And so the wetland is too dry. And during wet periods, it actually doesn't let water out fast enough. And so the wetland floods really deep. And so the park is about to go through a big resource management project to try to fix those hydrologic issues with the water. And so they're going to be breaching some of those old roads to allow the water to flow through. They're going to be plugging those ditches so that the water doesn't drain quickly. And they're going to be replacing that undersized culvert with a much bigger 12-foot culvert to restore the natural hydrology in that wetland. And so what we're interested in from a scientific perspective is whether those hydrologic changes that are going to happen in the wetland will affect the bird community in Great Meadow. And so, you know, birds are one of the biggest resources in that wetland. So a lot of people go to the Great Meadow specifically to birdwatch. And so we want to know if they're going to change the way the water moves through the wetland, does that change the bird community? And so to do that, we're using autonomous recording units, which are just these small recorders that, you know, record bird calls at certain times of the day. We've put them out in a few different places in Great Meadow. And then we've put them out in another wetland that's really similar to Great Meadow. It's called Gilmore Meadow. It's really similar, but the hydrology is a little more natural in Gilmore Meadow. So we put some recording units out there too as a reference wetland. And this year, what we're really doing is just collecting baseline data before we make any hydrologic changes to see, does the bird community kind of differ between those two wetlands? And then in the future, we'll go back once the hydrology has changed. We'll put the autonomous recording units out again, and we'll see, has the bird community shifted in Great Meadow because of the hydrologic changes?
So researchers at Skudik Institute are trying to figure out what impact hydrologic changes in Great Meadow will have on the birds in Acadia. This is such a daunting task. This is where Brooke Goodman comes in, the Kathy and Jim Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellow in Science Research at Skudik Institute.
And I'm in charge of our bioacoustics projects in the park.
Oh, and by the way, bioacoustics is the study of the production, transmission, and reception of animal sounds. Most of Brooke's work centers around these square box-shaped containers called ARUs, autonomous recording units. ARUs are these really sturdy recording devices that are used to record animals for long periods of time.
So I'm holding a Swift 1 from the Cornell Lab, and this is an ARU or autonomous recording unit. And what I can do with this is just put it out in the meadow, and I can leave it out for a month or 2 months or however long I want, and it will record data for me on an SD card. So it's a really effective way to capture bird data without having to go out into those wetlands every week or something to do a point count, which can be really difficult. So it helps us get a really good snapshot of what birds are in the meadow. And since there's no human out there counting them, we don't need to worry about our presence influencing their vocalization or what's around.
Brooke spends her days going to different spots in Acadia and setting up these ARUs by wrapping them around tree trunks or posts in order to capture the birds in the area.
We chose a bunch of sites to put up ARUs. And it's similar to point count where you want them to be like 350 meters apart and you don't want them to record the same birds. And you have to figure out how long you actually want to put it out for. So for ours, we're putting it out for around a month on a 24-hour recording schedule. So our ARUs are recording like all day, every day, collecting a ton of data.
And this is where the Great Meadow Restoration Project fits in. Brooks placed 7 ARUs in the disturbed Great Meadow and 3 ARUs in a healthy wetland called Gilmore Meadow.
And we're going to compare those two, with Great Meadow being in relatively poor condition and Gilmore Meadow being in significantly better condition.
And she's going to use this comparison to try to assess if Great Meadows restoration project impacts the bird population.
So one thing that I'm doing is creating a baseline. So right now I'm recording our breeding birds here in the summer. And so it'll take a couple of years for the hydrology change to actually impact Great Meadow and change the vegetation and change the birds that occupy it. So I'm collecting data now, and we're hoping in 5 or so years to collect data at the same places, at the same time, in the same way, and see how the bird populations have changed. So right now, this is all of our baseline, but this will be what we compare to in 5 years and see what the restoration efforts have done to the bird community.
She's hoping that a few years down the line, enough data will be collected to see if the restoration project in Great Meadow correlates with any changes of bird populations in the area.
So the ARUs, like through the summer, is really looking more at like what is the bird community like in Great Meadow and in Gilmore. And then, and so this is like the, we don't know what it is right now. Let's find out. Let's get the baseline. And then after the fact, we find out what it is and we see if it changed or not.
That was Acadia National Park biologist Bic Wheeler. We spoke about the importance of using data to create baselines in conservation. Without a point of comparison, it can be difficult to assess the impacts of climate change in restoration efforts.
A huge issue in conservation is understanding if it worked, right? And so we may be able to measure on a really broad scale, like, okay, conservation of black ducks has been pretty successful because continent-wide, the population has gone up. But we don't know if it was Great Meadow that did it or not, right? And so having these targets and these measurable results, I think is really super helpful. And this is, I mean, this seems like it's just like methodological, but if we can set up a way that is like follow this recipe and you'll know if your cake is good or bad, right, is really key. Because right now what we have is we don't really have a recipe. We don't really know what a good cake tastes like. So we're just hoping for the best.
I liked what Bic said. An issue in conservation is that the researchers don't really have a recipe to follow to help out the birds in Great Meadow. But this study is a great step towards figuring out what the necessary components are to make the best conditions for these birds to thrive. When producing this episode, I found myself becoming more attuned to the intricacies of my surroundings. I began to hear birds everywhere. I found myself standing outside the grocery store just listening, seeing how many birds I could hear at once. At first, it was just one, but like your eyes adjust to light when stargazing, I realized bird watching, or bird listening, plays by similar laws. The more I looked, the more I listened, the more there were. An exercise in attention, a break from chronic human-centered myopia. Remember Bridget Butler from the last episode? The self-described bird diva and naturalist from Rutland, Vermont. When I was talking to Bridget, this topic of attention kept coming up. And how something as simple as your own noticing can create ripples in the world of conservation.
And so there is this tie-in with science as well. That I see in this work, where it's creating a personal connection to place, the land, and the birds there over time. And I think that's this other key piece, is that especially as we look at global climate change, things happening along those lines. Here in Vermont, we just had a huge flood event that affected all of us greatly. So I think we're seeing that on the ground as well in our everyday lives, and how can a practice of connecting with birds in this way help us form a deeper understanding of the landscape and then our role in being stewards of that landscape? And so it does become a personal and emotional thing. I think that's the other piece that's missing in a lot of our science and conservation work right now, is allowing people the space to be in relation with nature. And not just look at birds or the land as an object or a resource to use or to delight in. It's becoming more relational.
One of the big challenges in environmentalism is that we're conditioned to feel this disconnect between the, quote, natural world and the, quote, human world. But nothing exists in isolation. No matter where you go, birds are there too. It's taken me a while to notice that. And it's incredibly egocentric and human-centric. But it's incredibly normal too. I like to imagine that one day, more people will care about the birds around them and consequently, the greater environmental picture too. Getting others to notice is the biggest challenge.
One thing I like about Acadia and just getting to talk about to visitors is like people who maybe don't have such easy access to nature go to the national park to get that access. And this is where I can introduce them to things like birds and like the park rangers can take them on programs. And I think that's just like a fun thing about Acadia. Like people coming here might not actually have that access as easy as I did as a kid, which I'm very grateful that I did because it got me into this career.
Thanks so much for listening to See to Trees, a podcast from Scutic Institute at Acadia National Park, a nonprofit partner of the National Park Service, inspiring science, learning, and community for a changing world. Acadia National Park is on traditional lands of the Wabanaki, people of the dawn. A big thanks to this episode's guests, Laura Sebastianelli, Chris Nadeau, Brooke Goodman, Vic Wheeler, and Bridget Butler. See to Trees is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Catherine Devine. Catherine Wong provided production support, and Catherine Schmidt is our senior editor. Our music was written by Eric Green, performed with Ryan Curless and Stu Mahan, and recorded at Northblood Studios in Midcoast, Maine. The cover art was created by Sarah Lucchini. See to Trees is possible through generous support by the Kathy and Jim Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellowship, the National Park Foundation, National Park Service, and Scutic Institute.
You're listening to Coastal Conversations on WERU at 89.9 FM and streaming online at weru.org.
That was such a great story from Catherine Devine, one that I find myself reflecting on greatly, particularly her tale of Laura Sebastianelli capturing the song of the American Bittern. My name is Julia Rush, and I am the 2025 to 2026 Kathy and Jim Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellow in Science Communication. I arrived on campus just over a week ago and can already feel the presence and character of the songbirds in Acadia. The move to Scutic is a bit of a homecoming for me. I was born and raised here in Downeast, Maine, went to high school on MDI, and spent much of my adolescence outside in the woods and in Acadia. For college, I ventured to Boston and even abroad to London, England for a semester, getting a real taste for city living. As one can imagine, the soundscape around me completely changed. I became so accustomed to ambulance sirens and helicopters in Boston that I can't even recall an instance of just sitting and listening to birds. Moving back to Maine, particularly Scutic, where we are privileged with almost no sound pollution, my soundscape has shifted yet again. My mornings are accompanied by interlacing harmonies and, at times, cacophonous song and chatter, much like they were when I was a child. Except now, I'm listening more closely than ever. The idea of slow birding, as Catherine just talked about, is a practice I found myself gravitating towards in my week of living at Scutic, without even realizing. Last week, I was out with the other early career professionals walking the Sundew Trail here on the Scutic Institute campus. We stopped to look out at the ocean and bathe in our surroundings, and that's when I made my first official bird identification. With the help of Jarrow Acadia Early Career Fellow in Science Research, Jillian Audier, I heard and identified the black-throated green warbler. To any seasoned Maine birder, this may seem like a pretty anticlimactic sighting. Black-throated green warblers are very common around this area and fairly easy to spot. But to me, someone reconnecting with nature in their home, it was thrilling. I stood stock still and I watched as it flitted from tree to tree, and I felt giddy. I can only imagine the thrill that I felt from that little moment pales in comparison to what Laura Sebastianelli must have felt finally recording the elusive American Bittern. So much of that excitement I feel comes back to this idea of connecting with place and the huge role songbirds play in that. As Bridget Butler said in this episode, we deepen our personal connection to place and the world around us with these careful observations. I now realize that growing up with access to the outdoors was a privilege. Coming home has me reconnecting with nature in unexpected ways. For instance, the smell of Acadia is like nowhere else and is such a stark contrast to the smells I lived with in Boston. Naturally, you learn to ignore, tune out, and even adapt your breathing at times to avoid taking in mouthfuls of exhaust. Much like with smell, I also learn to tune out loud sounds and engage with the world around me in different ways than I do at home in Maine. Now that I'm back, I'm being more intentional, opening my ears, breathing deep, and walking slowly to reach what Catherine closed on, the harmony and connection we can have with nature. It's been 2 years since Catherine reported on this story, and Laura Sebastianelli is still out in the park gathering birdsong audio. And this year's Jarrow Early Career Acadia Fellow in Science Research is working with audio recording units, ARUs, to continually monitor bird populations in Great Meadow and Gilmore Meadow of Acadia. As I approach the next few months living and reporting in Acadia, I plan to bring some of that slow birding mindset with me, to listen and learn from the nature around me and become a better steward of this spectacular place we call home.
Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations. Join us on the fourth Friday of each month at 4 p.m. for information, stories, and conversations about the issues and people of the Maine coast. That great music you're hearing in the background is called A Following Sea and was composed and performed by Paul Anderson. On behalf of Maine Sea Grant and in partnership with Scudic Institute and the First Coast, we wish you a good weekend.